This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and I'll remind you that Layla Mudin, part of our team at the Hoffman Center, is available for consultations for those of you who are perhaps unable to travel to New York and become a direct patient of the Hoffman Center. She works with patients all over the country, patients who already have doctors and have test results that they want her to review, and to provide them with a nutritional perspective on whatever problem they have. So for information on that, you can call the Hoffman Center, or you can read about it at drhoffman.com. Okay, so...
All right, we've got an email from David. Good morning, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Hey, how did he know it was morning? Anyway, my mother had recently undergone successful cataract surgery. She's 83 years old and in very good health. Since her surgery, should she continue to take lutein? Many years ago, I learned from your show that lutein helps prevent the development of cataracts. In my mother's case, she wasn't very dedicated to taking supplements. However, does the body require lutein for other functions?
Right. The answer is yes, capital Y, capital E, capital yes, because an 80-year-old is far more likely to lose their vision in an irrevocable way with macular degeneration. See, cataracts are something you can routinely fix.
Yeah.
And the strength of lutein is not so much in protecting the lens of the eye. Mm. It really doesn't do that much for the lens of the eye. It's where lutein resides is in the retina. It's the yellowish-orange pigment that is part of the retina. And it actually acts like an internal sunglass.
Oh.
You know, like when you tint glasses, you put a Polaroid lens in glasses, protects your eyes from the sun. But what protects your inner eye from the sun is some pigment that resides in the retina, which is the photoreceptor area of the eye in the back of the eye. So without lutein, and lutein does so much more than that, it's a wonderful antioxidant as well as just simply a filter. But if you don't have adequate lutein in the back of your eye, you're much more likely to get macular degeneration, which is, there's no fix for that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And the nutrition, we just did a whole podcast on that subject. It was wonderful with Dr. Thomas Williams. Mm. And he reviewed all the research on this. And the research is very strong for lutein, zeaxanthin, DHA from fish oil, docosahexaenoic acid, zinc. Less so for beta-carotene. Beta-carotene, not so much. But there's also possibility that things like N-acetylcysteine, taurine.
So not all about the carrots.
Right. Well, carrots have...
Have the others.
Yeah, I think carrots are famous for having beta-carotene, but that yellow pigment there, it's all about the spectrum of carotenoids that are beneficial. So that's why we don't even sell beta-carotene anymore. And my multi doesn't contain beta-carotene. It contains mixed carotenoids. Mm-hmm. So you should look for that when you look for high-quality supplements, not just the beta-carotene. Because beta-carotene is very passé. It's very sort of 1990s.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes. And, you know, how much to take? 10 or 20 milligrams of lutein, 3 to 6 milligrams of zeaxanthin in a good supplement. We have some eye supplements at the Hoffman Center that conform to the research in what's called AREDS 1 and AREDS 2. That's the research that actually established what is the proper amount of the key nutrients to protect the retina. It's more so retina than the lens.
Wow. David, congratulations to your mother for her bionic vision. My mother, my 79-year-old mother, recently had that surgery, and now she's thrown away the glasses. It's
you know, it's really, you know, we tend to downplay conventional medicine, but really it's something almost to look forward to.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if we outlive our eyes, and, you know, in previous eras, people would go blind.
Yeah.
You know, or they just, elderly people would just have clouded eyes and they wouldn't see. Mm-hmm. And now when you reach whatever, you know, some people younger than others, but you reach, you know, 80 or 85, it's pretty routine to have cataract surgery, and you can get custom intraocular implants that are really beneficial in terms of restoring your vision.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, like laser surgery for your eyes. But it's actually a lens inside your eyes. And I think Medicare gives you a standard lens. You might have to pay a little more for a superior lens, which I guess is, you know, it's like, you know, you get what you pay for.
Right.
But you can really get a very nice improvement. The one complication is that occasionally with cataract surgery, you can worsen glaucoma, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
But it's really become so high-tech and relatively easy to do.
It's very easy.
It's like, you know, it's become so routine in our older population. So it's nothing to be afraid of.
Absolutely. David, best of luck to your mother. Thank you for your email. Okay. Let's see. Forrest sends an email. He sent us another recent email along the same lines. Layla, one of your podcasts recommended eating Brazil nuts. I must have been talking about Brazil nuts for selenium or something.
Yeah.
I stopped eating them when I heard they had lead or some other problem. Lots of foods have some amount of lead. It simply exists in our environment. It's a matter of how much.
Right.
It's really it. I would not stop eating Brazil nuts. Mm-hmm. Three Brazil nuts are going to give you a nice amount of selenium.
Right.
At least the RDA of selenium. So it's a good source.
What if you get really hungry, eat a whole bag of Brazil nuts? Can you
Who
do yourself
can
in?
Eat a whole bag of Brazil nuts. They're such a hard nut.
They're also too expensive.
They're very...
Right. You're kind of limited. It's like, oh, wow, that was just $8. Sorry. You know.
This is actually... I'm glad Forrest brings up this question because this is... part of why nature loves variety in your diet.
Okay.
When you're eating a variety of foods, there's less chance of toxin accumulation.
You know,
that's really it.
This brings up a very interesting issue, is that certain plants are bioaccumulators, and they preferentially pull things from the soil to nourish themselves, but inadvertently they may pull things like arsenic from the soil.
Sunflowers.
Rice, for example, now has shown to have fairly high amounts of arsenic, which is a concern because the very first food that they give to babies is like a little rice cereal, right?
Yes.
And, you know,
it should be completely other things, but
Well, speak to that issue. That's kind of interesting because, you know, I have in our family, we've been blessed with a young child, not my child, but, you know, with a relative. And, He's 5 months old. And so,
what is he eating?
Well, it's really interesting because his, grandma on one side is from Ecuador and they have a whole system there of how to introduce solid foods to babies. Now, they're all about breastfeeding. That's the primary source.
And
he still is getting breast milk, but he's beginning to get solids and he's very interested in solid foods. But this apparently is the very age where you cultivate the taste for vegetables and fresh fruits. And it's a very important age for imprinting taste tolerance.
Yeah.
And so they started with some green peas, mashed green peas, and then they're going to go to some parsnips, and then they're maybe going to go to some butternut squash.
Wonderful.
And these are they're so rich and full of healthy fiber and nutrients. And these are foods that sometimes, you know, kids when they're a little older, they disdain, you know, because tastes are maybe a little exotic or strong. But he's going to town on that stuff. And rice is, you know, it's kind of a purified starch.
It is.
Basically. So.
Because it's not a whole grain that the baby is getting.
It turns out it's good for diarrhea. It seems there's some anti-diarrheal properties to rice and rice water. You know, when a baby has diarrhea, sometimes a little rice, you know, liquid or, you know.
And you have to be careful with babies and diarrhea. They have such a small water table that they need hydration quick.
Right.
So. Yeah.
So anyway, so we're trying to create a sort of a sophisticated and varied palate for him at an age where he's going to start to respond to taste preferences.
Wonderful.
And actually, that's a very small window. The window is, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wait too long, they start
to
get a mind of their own, and they start to be very finicky. And I have to say that my recollection is I was extremely finicky as a child. I was really impossible. You know,
wow.
I would eat hot dogs and French fries and no greens and no fish and, you know, even potatoes were like, except for French fries, were
French
like...
French fries. Yeah. You sound like my sister.
I
ate everything that was put in front of
me.
She was finicky as anything.
You were born to the field of nutrition.
I don't think I met a
I was dragged
I didn't
kicking
like.
And screaming to the field of nutrition, I think. Well... Eventually, I came around.
Yeah.
I mean, it shows that you can correct these habits because now
can.
I eat everything.
You can. You
yeah.
know, it's interesting because I've even had men your age and in their 50s who, when I mention a green vegetable, they almost turn to 6-year-olds and hold their breath
yeah.
and the arms get crossed in front of them of, I'm not having this conversation.
I
like what I eat to eat. It's really something.
Well, some of it's psychological, but some of it is biological because we now have tests which we can do genetically to determine if people are super tasters.
Yes.
And super tasters find the taste of certain things repugnant. They're
bitter.
Two very strong,
yeah.
bitter tasters. And so if you have that gene, it might make you fat because you're going to gravitate towards more creamy, sweet,
and bland
textures.
Foods.
Yeah. Right.
Much more refined carbohydrates.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's some genetic, thing. These are people who, you know, we could almost in the future, do tests to analyze people's Achilles heels vis-a-vis food cravings.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting back to pulling arsenic and other metals out of the soil, sunflowers, rice, you know, if you're concerned about growing produce in your backyard or something, besides doing a soil test, if you find that there are some levels of metals and things, particularly arsenic, which is found in a lot of pesticides, herbicides, so
right. It
may be there, grow sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you've grown those sunflowers, you need to harvest them and destroy them. You
right.
don't want to replant those
right.
seeds. Or do anything. You need to throw them away.
Right.
So
don't,
that could
don't
help
burn them in your fireplace because
exactly.
you'll inhale them.
Exactly.
Well, so you got this project ahead of you because you're building a house. You bought a lot.
Yes.
And you
got to test. We're thinking of planting.
You got to test the soil.
We got to test the soil.
Did you test the soil yet?
Not yet. That's one of the next things we're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
we get rid of some more trees.
Because you know, maybe in 1920 it was like a junkyard. You never know. I mean, they could have put, you know, somebody could have put.
We've
abandoned.
Looked at the history.
Right.
There hasn't been that in the last 4 to 5 decades, but still, what about prior
okay.
to then?
It's an old part of the country, Long
yeah.
Island. Yeah, but
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully,
But we're going to plant stuff. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Can't wait, Forrest. Thank you very much for your email. Eat some Brazil nuts. Eat some today. Okay.
Oh, do you happen to know
how
much selenium is in a Brazil nut? Offhand, I think it's pretty high. I think it's like 60.
60 in one?
Yeah, 60 micrograms.
Not in the three?
No,
okay.
I think it's 60, so it's pretty darn high.
Okay, I'm trying to think what
mistaken.
The RDA is.
I can look that up while you ask the next question.
Okay. All right. We've got an email from Jill. Hello, wondering if home scales that also show your body fat, your muscle, your water percentage, and your bone density are reliable. Should I trust the readings at all? Thank you for your time.
Okay.
Jill.
So,
yeah.
So you might have heard the computer, my keyboard clicking while you asked that question.
Uh-huh.
You'll have to repeat the question because I was focusing. Wait, hang on 1 second.
Sure.
It says, I was close because it says, consumption of 2 Brazil nuts each day is as effective for increasing selenium status and enhancing glutathione peroxidase activity as 100 micrograms of selenomethionine per day.
Wow.
But just 1 Brazil nut per day would have been sufficient to raise dietary selenium intake to within recommended intake levels for the mineral.
Wow.
So it really doesn't take much.
It doesn't.
And, you know, typical supplements have 100 or 200 micrograms of selenium.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, selenium at a very high level is toxic, so you don't want to take too much. You know, maybe you don't want to take more than
150, 150 to 200 generally.
Yeah,
for
probably
people.
Not more than 400.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was close.
That was close. Wow. Okay. Jill is wondering If home scales that also measure your body fat, your muscle, your water percentage, your bone density, are they reliable? I imagine it would have to depend on the brand.
So I've known a little bit about this. This is based on impedance plethysmography, okay, which is a technology. We have these scales. We were a pioneer in having one of these scales at the Hoffman Center like 25 years ago.
Right.
You know,
where
you stand on the scale,
and it
costs like, you know, $3,500. It was very expensive. It wasn't for consumers.
Yeah.
As with, you know, everything, flat screen TVs, computers, you know, laptops. You know, my first laptop cost me $6,500 in 1990, you know.
Right.
And now they've miniaturized that. So the technology is better. I don't know how much error there is. I think they are prone to error for the reason that certain things can affect it. So, for example, it measures water versus fat. Those are the two main things it measures.
Okay.
So it reads as lean body mass, water, and fat is fat. But what if you, let's say you just had a lunch, which is like a pound of food.
Right.
And it's going to read that mostly as water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to that'll make it look like you have more lean body mass.
Oh,
right?
I see. Yeah,
or,
yeah.
I mean, even if you had your morning bowel movement.
Yes.
Or say you just worked out and you got a little dehydrated. You haven't repleted the water. It would make you seem fatter because you lost lean body mass.
I see.
But also, I think there's some imprecision to the electronics of those things, like how precise can they be? There probably is like a couple of percent wobble in that test.
Right.
So if from
some margin of error.
So
yeah.
If you jump on every day, it's like, oh, I gained, I lost.
Well, our weight is not going to be static from day to day.
Definitely
we have
not.
A water table.
Yes.
It's that kind
definitely
of a thing.
Not.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
so,
we're not machines.
Right.
Jill, you may want to go to your local gym. They might have a better machine than what you have at home. And certainly your nutritionist's office, your doctor's office.
It's likely to have a more precise model.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, they're really not gone of using the calipers to measure fat and all of that kind of a thing.
Right. So the ultimate test, the ultimate one
is... And that depends on who's using it.
There is a variant on the... bone density test, which actually measures fat percentages. I think it's a little more accurate. It's a unit that you can go into, but it involves a small amount of radiation exposure, which analyzes your lean to fat compartments of your body. And that's I think, a little more accurate. And again, that's clearly not a consumer item. It's in a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Some doctors who specialize in bariatrics, you know, may have those units. Most hospitals, I guess they may have them, but unless the doctor's particularly interested in weight loss, they're not likely to have those.
I remember during my internship, when I did a rotation at the Obesity Research Center up at St. Luke's.
I did that too.
You did that too?
I did
it
with Dr. Xavier Pissonnier.
Yes.
I did that too.
Oh my goodness.
But I did it 20 years before you, I think.
Right. Yeah, I did get to meet him.
Yes.
But in the metabolic chamber.
That's interesting because we got electives, right? And you got to select.
Yes.
And I got to select because this is a special, I took a month away from Einstein to study at St. Luke's, which was then the preeminent obesity research center. And so we got to lectures and we studied it. Of course, they had a lot of the wrong ideas then.
Yeah.
You know, low-fat diet and blah, blah, blah.
All of that kind of thing. Right. But the underwater weighing is the gold standard.
They did that for me. Yes, I went in the pool and I had like, you know, it's based on Archimedes' principle.
Hmm.
You know, Archimedes figured this out in ancient Greece, like whatever, you know, 200, 300 BC, where you go in the water and it measures your, specific gravity is the term.
Oh, specific
gravity.
Gravity.
Right. Which
also
is,
in food
which is
science,
a mathematical determination, based on how dense you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the expression you're dense.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's better to be dense. Because that means you have less fat.
Yes,
right?
Because fat floats.
Right. So fat floats and lean sinks. So basically, that's the Archimedean principle.
Yeah.
It's also why, you know, terrific long-distance swimmers, especially like open-water swimmers who swim like, you know, 10, 20 miles, they tend to look really chubby. They almost look like marine mammals. They adapt to that by
They've
having...
They've got lots of... shoulder breadth.
Well, they have. It's not just muscles. It's fat. It's subcutaneous fat. It's actually an adaptation to floating and to cold temperatures, to cold tolerance.
Wow.
So they don't. Yeah. It's if you want to look really like svelte. Long distance swimming is not for you, especially as a woman. The women swimmers.
The women are.
They're awesome, but they're not Vogue
they look
models.
Like
they're not Vogue models.
Atlas.
Yeah. But they don't have. They have a lot of subcutaneous fat.
Interesting.
So it helps them float. Hmm. Anyway, so where do we get? Where
well,
we,
how much? How do much we get does diet would have to do with that? I mean, you look at Michael Phelps' diet. He was eating
enormous
pizza
calories
and French fries and horrible. Well. Anyway.
You know, when you swim 6,000 yards, you know, a day, or 10,000 yards a day.
Yeah.
It kind of.
You need fuel.
And you're 22 years old.
You need fuel.
it's not so consequential.
Right.
You know?
Right. But if you stop swimming and you continue eating that way, that's a whole other story.
However, at 62, 63, I'm 62? I'm 60. Yeah, I'm 63. I just subtracted a year. I am following a paleo diet, and my workouts are better. So, you know, I'm not cramming myself with carbs. I used to, like, you know, have the big spaghetti meals before a work, you know, before a race or something. Not anymore, you know, for sure.
Terrific.
Lighter is better.
Yeah, we got onto this topic with Jill's email about the at-home scales for body fat, percentage, water, muscle.
Sorry about the stream of consciousness.
That's okay.
Do we have time for a quick question?
A quick
one. We'll make it up to our listeners with a quick question.
Oh, you're going to like this one.
Yeah, okay.
This comes from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, regarding the Whole30 diet, I need to gain weight. Would the Whole30 diet be contraindicated for me, since you said that you lost weight while you're on it?
The answer is...
Will that be a quick...
Yeah, the answer is it depends. And I think one way to do the Whole30 and not lose weight and possibly gain weight is to eat a lot of fat and eat a lot of the right kind of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Because...
Get the calories up.
Yeah, because like I made a whole big butternut squash the other day, and, you know, that with ghee on it, which is permissible, is very caloric.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, plenty of avocados and lots of coconut oil and, you know, meat where, you know...
Short ribs instead of a lean sirloin.
Yes, right.
Stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, so I think that that's permissible. On the other hand, you know... You want to be healthy. I mean, it's not about the weight that you are. It's like if you're optimal health and you're very lean, that's all to the good.
That's it. A lot of people feel like they're too thin and want to put weight on when, in fact, when you look at their numbers and so forth, height, weight, and everything, and their biochemistries,
I think
they're fine where they are.
I think there's
a matter of how they look or it's some kind of...
There's an obsession, I think, with women. It's breasts and butts. Women get
Well, that's the new... The breast augmentation ads on the subways, and then the J-Lo butt is the latest.
It's all about that
implant.
Bass, no treble, you know, that whole thing. You know, like,
bass, no treble.
Right? You know, it's like, that's like having a big rear end, right?
Yeah.
And
junk in the trunk.
Junk in the trunk.
I think is in.
Right. And for men, like, big orexia. It's like, you're going to be awesomely, you know, big, huge shoulders, like, you could barely get through the doorway and, you know, look, you can't really pick your body off the shelf. You can just be all that you can be. Be in the best health that you can be, and your body configuration will reflect the best that you can be, you know.
Yeah.
And some of that's genetic, and some of it's conditioned through exercise and diet.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, Michael, for your email.
Okay. Thanks for joining us, and make sure you send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll endeavor to answer as many of them as possible next week and not get off on tangents. But you enjoy those tangents.
Yes.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Hopefully you do. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.